The weekend has come and we've had over 24 hours to digest GS2055, the report from the House of Bishops on marriage and same-sex relationships. Friday saw tears and celebrations from different quarters, but the commonly accepted understanding is that the bishops are recommending no change in our doctrine, no change in our liturgical practice, and a clarification of what is and isn't possible pastorally for clergy when dealing with same-sex couples. The report itself understands the difficulty of a church moving forward that has within it so many who disagree with its formal position. And the bishops wrote the following in paragraph 10, I quote, "Earnest imperatives must not be a smokescreen for dismissing those we disagree with. We all seek to retain personal integrity while seeking the best for our brothers and sisters in the church and the many more to whom we are called to witness. That witness will be immeasurably damaged by allowing our differences to break us into fragments. That is why we do not offer resolution in ways that will please some and dismay others, but seek to make steps together that will allow us to act together while retaining doctrinal coherence." Close quote. There's a lot in those few sentences that can be unpacked. The key point is the last sentence, that the bishops understand that their absolute priority is to retain doctrinal coherency. You can read so many liberals today making suggestions X, Y, and Z, but almost all of them stem from a rather hazy view of what our doctrine of sex and marriage actually should be. One blogger this weekend pretty well asked us to formally accept sex outside of marriage, but when pushed on where the boundary between that and promiscuity lay, was unable to answer. Another person said that we should simply recognise love and commitment where we found it, but was left floundering when asked if that meant we should endorse and bless the love and commitment of consensual incest or polyandry. You see, if you'd bother to read what the bishops wrote, and not just what you think they thought when they wrote or read GS2055 through the lens of your bias, if you actually bother to read what they actually wrote, you'll see hints that the bishops did actually explore how the Church of England could move to a new position on sex and marriage and how such a doctrinal shift would be achieved. There is a whole lengthy legal appendix to GS2055 that begins to walk through what has to be done to move us to a different position on sex and marriage. If you want to change our doctrine, then we need to change Canon B30, and that has implications for a whole series of areas, not just the prayer book marriage service. When you look at how the Canadian and American Episcopal churches made their moves on same-sex blessings, you see a riot of ill-informed, illogical, inconsistent changes. By contrast, the House of Bishops of the Church of England are at pains to seek a logical and coherent and biblically satisfactory path forward, even if that path is change. Paragraphs 56 onwards are revealing as to the way the bishops are going about thinking through these issues and working out how to move forward. I quote, "It is clear that this emerging framework represents, at one level, a compromise between some bishops who would be inclined to seek more far-reaching changes in the direction of, for example, affirming married same-sex couples within the life of the church, and some bishops who would like to see the sinfulness of any sexually active relationship outside of heterosexual marriage more consistently upheld. If it is to be a constructive way forward, however, it needs to be more than that. It needs to have a theological coherence which those with different perspectives may all recognise. Disagreements between the bishops are held within the context of the common affirmation set out in the introduction to this report. The Church's participation in the mission of God requires constant and prayerful attention, both to the truth of Jesus Christ as revealed in the Holy Scriptures and to what is happening in the particular culture in which we live. All are committed to this demanding process of double listening." Close quote. And this, listeners, is incredibly important. What the bishops are saying here is that if the doctrine of the Church of England changes, it has to change for reasons that make sense to a broad cross-section of the bishops. Any changes need theological coherence, that's the words that they use, and we can't just agree to disagree and allow people to believe what they want and do what they want. This need for unity is seen not just as something intra-church, but also inter-church, as we read in paragraph 60 and 61. Again, I quote, "The unity of a particular church is not something that can be detached from the unity of the universal church. As well as continuing and deepening communion within the Church of England, as we begin to deliberate on next steps in this area, we want to listen to and learn with other churches in and beyond the Anglican Communion, seeking together the mind of Christ. In doing so, account has to be taken of the fact that the overwhelming majority of those churches subscribe to the traditional teaching on marriage reflected in our own doctrine and teaching. Moreover, the Church of England's own position in the Anglican Communion, membership of which is defined by being in communion with the See of Canterbury, inevitably means that any departure from its doctrine and teaching would have implications for the communion. The unity of the Church cannot be detached from our common faith in the Gospel of Jesus Christ, and therefore from the teaching through which that Gospel is faithfully passed on. In following this approach, the Church of England would be continuing to affirm unequivocally the doctrine of marriage set out in Canon B30 and to be able to expound it with confidence as the Church is teaching. Given the distinctive relationship between doctrine and public worship in the Church of England, that also requires that what happens in our services consistently reflects that teaching." Close quote. Wow. I mean, that is an incredibly conservative way of viewing how we form our doctrine and our interrelationship with other churches. The bishops have understood that claims that the Spirit is telling the Church a new thing need to have evidence that the Spirit isn't just giving special favour to one little corner of its domain, but is actually telling this new truth throughout the whole of its child, the Church. That means that even local variations in liturgy that teach something contrary to Canon B30 cannot be acceptable for a church that takes its apostolic and Catholic nature so, so seriously. So the bishops are clear that to change our doctrine of sex and marriage is a serious issue, and not something that can simply be done by a show of hands in synod. It seems to me that so much of the liberal criticism of GS2055 simply is not engaging with this vital point of ecclesiastical governance and discernment and liturgical process. The bishops have indicated how a church in the historic apostolic tradition would move forward in this area, the issues involved, and the reasons why, therefore, they have decided at this time not to alter Canon B30 and to enact the changes that would be the natural consequence of that. The response, sad to say, of the overwhelming majority of liberals that I have read in the last 24 hours has been to abuse them publicly for this, to insult them, to accuse them of imbecility and ignorance, whereas in fact GS2055 shows some considerable level of contemplation of the structural issues involved, and to threaten disobedience. It is as though the progressive lobby simply isn't willing to do the hard ecclesiastical, doctrinal and liturgical work that is necessary for the changes that they are proposing. They simply want to enforce their will on the bishops without laying down a proper process or working through the coherence of any change in our position. As one bishop put it to me over the weekend, quote, "I'm simply not at home to the 'I'll scream and squeam till I get what I want' form of argument," close quote. And frankly, I don't blame him. Let's turn then to what the bishops are offering to do that is new. For the moment, we'll put aside the new teaching document, because in some senses, this is not the crucial issue at this time. The bishops did an incredibly good job on some issues in human sexualities a decade or so ago, as compared to issues in human sexuality from the early 90s, which is a product of its time and really does need to be revised. And I'm sure that any new teaching document that the bishops produce will be of a similar calibre to some issues. No, the immediate point of interest is that which is laid out in paragraph 63 of GS2055. I quote, "While moral questions remain for the Church of England about the status of sexual relationships between people of the same gender, the House of Bishops has affirmed that stable, faithful homosexual relationships can embody crucial social virtues of fidelity and mutuality. One challenge is therefore to explore how that affirmation in the case of both celibate and non-celibate relationships might be more fully articulated in our theological ethics and better communicated in our pastoral and missional practice, whilst maintaining the current doctrine of the Church of England on marriage and relationships. Nor can this be separated from the Church's response to the prevalence of stable, faithful, heterosexual relationships other than marriage in our society. Close quotes. This is clearly a worthy endeavour. How do we maintain our doctrine of sex and marriage and yet provide the right kind of resources to support, where appropriate, celibate and non-celibate same-sex relationships? I'm encouraged to see the bishops make that clear distinction. And I think the challenge to those of us who are more conservative is how we contribute in a useful fashion to that discussion. And that's why the response from GAFCON UK to GS2055 is so disappointing. I quote from their press statement. Quote, "We do not have confidence that this document will guarantee the maintenance of orthodoxy within the Church of England for the future. We need to express our serious reservations about the many ambiguities in the text relating to how we as Anglicans understand truth and goodness, sin and salvation, and how we should carry out pastoral and liturgical practice. We see the document as giving a rationale for maintaining the current position, but along with many faithful Anglicans in England, we believe that the current position is not at all satisfactory, as it involves a lack of clarity about our message, openness to revisionist theology and practice, and further conflict within the church. We do not agree that the holding of contradictory views in the same church while avoiding rancour and separation is somehow a sign of the kingdom of God. We are concerned that the emphasis on freedom given to clergy in terms of pastoral practice and the possibility of further revision to the church's teaching in future will do nothing to prevent a trajectory which aligns with the ethics of contemporary culture rather than the challenging but life-giving teaching of the Bible." Close quotes. Dear listener, if I could offer you now the sound of me banging my head against my desk, I would do it. Because this seems to me to be an almost willful misreading of GS2055. Let's raise very quickly in the time we have three areas that demonstrate this point. GAFCON said this, quote, "We are concerned that the emphasis on freedom given to clergy in terms of pastoral practice and the possibility of further revision to the church's teaching in future will do nothing to prevent a trajectory which aligns with the ethics of contemporary culture." Close quotes. Were GAFCON not reading the document when it repeatedly said that the bishops have no intention of changing Canon B30? Secondly, were they not reading the document when the bishops said that any pastoral guidance for same-sex couples could not contradict the position of sex and marriage as laid out in Canon B30? Third, did their copy of GS2055 have paragraphs 36 to 43 ripped out of them, together with the legal appendix, all of which discuss how the bishops will approach the ability of clergy to give a pastoral response to same-sex couples, and, crucially, the necessity for much clearer guidance of what may and may not happen than is currently given? Can GAFCON UK not see that this itself, this last point, will very, very likely lead to a clear list of prescriptions and proscriptions, which will firstly make clergy more, not less, accountable for their liturgical actions, and secondly, make bishops more and not less accountable for their response to their clergy's liturgical actions? It seems to me that both extreme wings in the Church of England are trying to see the worst in GS2055 rather than look for the best. And perhaps this summarises the last 20 years of debate on the subject. What the bishops are now offering us is a clear statement on what our doctrine of sex and marriage is and some clear guidelines as to how we can support those people who order their lives in ways that lie outside the normative standard for Christians, but still nonetheless are part of our worshipping community. It strikes me that this is a very good thing. And even if I don't agree 100% with the bishops, and I don't, we now have a path forward that we should all seek to come on board with and make work. There is such an amazing opportunity for us to articulate to the people of England how a church that believes in the biblical understanding of sex and marriage can still pastor a nation that has largely turned its back on that. Crikey, wouldn't that be amazing missiological stuff? Wouldn't it? But you know what? That's not going to happen, is it? Because there are just far too many people in the Church of England who have to have things exactly as they want them, and nothing less will do. This is Radio Free Canterbury, and I'm Peter Ault.